All right, welcome everybody to Intersection Studios' first podcast of 2013. I'm here with David.
Hey, everybody.
Ben.
Hi.
And Wade.
Hello.
And missing today's podcast is Austin. He can't make it.
He will be here next time, though.
Yep. First, I'd like to just talk about our format that we're going to go with for today's podcast. We're going to start with some updates about the company and then go into some local Minnesota activities that we've been included with, and then open it up for a worldwide discussion on films and games and other things we're interested in. So first, let's kick it off with some introductions, and we'll have David go first.
Okay, cool. Excuse me. So yeah, I'm David. I just graduated this last May from Augsburg College, where I studied film and theater. And I've been doing filmmaking and filmmaking stuff now for the past 8 years or so. And what Intersection is almost 3 years old now, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
About there. Which Ben and I started back in 2010. And we're very happy to see it has grown to include Wade and Lee and Austin as well.
Yep. And this is actually our kind of a second attempt at a podcast, or yep, just reboot, as you guys did.
Yep. We did have an old one. But we had a slew of problems with how it was accessible on iTunes and whatnot. And yeah.
Oh, cool. Ben.
Yeah. Hi. My name is Ben Robertson, and I also graduated from Augsburg. I studied computer science, and I got a minor in math and management information systems. So as far as the company is concerned, I act as an sort of producer role. So I've been doing film and, film in a video format for probably the past three and a half years, but I've been storytelling for probably about the past seven. So,
I think that's about it. Yeah. All right, Wade.
Hi, everybody. I'm Wade. I, went to school at MCTC and Augsburg, both for film production. I was looking at schools out in California and Chicago, but the Twin Cities is so great and up and coming that it kept me around. And so I've been making films with these guys for the past, year, I guess. The first one was Finger Bang. And it's been a lot of fun. Can't wait to see where it goes in the future.
Minnesota's great, except for me right now when it's 8 degrees outside. With
I'll
a windshield
second, I'll
of
second that.
Negative 10.
Sorry, Ben.
I will have you know, gentlemen, that it is 9 degrees outside.
Yeah. All right, well, that leaves me, and I forgot to say who I was in the beginning.
I was going to say, yeah, I thought we were missing somebody.
My name is Lee Anderson, and I grew up in Elk River, Minnesota, went to school with Wade, through high school, and we're involved with a lot of activities there. We did a weekly TV show for the school, yearbook DVD, all sorts of stuff, and also side projects. But
and we started Elkademy Awards.
Oh, yep.
The first film festival of Elk River.
An Oscar-ish show for the students at the school to submit videos and kind of get recognized for the top ones.
Which, by the way,
categories.
When I was working on the CBS show Elementary, I was wearing my Elkademy shirt, and people were asking me, what is that? And I'm like, yeah, that's right. We're pretty cool back in Minnesota.
And that we believe it's still going on, right?
You know, I don't know. Let me check it out.
So if it is, that would be its fifth year or sixth year?
It started in 2007, so this would be its sixth.
Yes. And, so that's kind of our background. I'm kind of like the technical guy a little bit. I do web development for a small company in Minnesota right now on the side, but I also involved with, official name is Lead Engineer.
Lead effects engineer.
Yeah. We kind of made that up, but I do a lot of compositing, modeling, all sorts of stuff like that. Austin, who's gone, he also is currently going to Augsburg.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have him probably introduce himself later on.
Yeah, he should be here for the next episode.
He kind of...
He does a little bit of everything.
Writing. Yeah, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, he does some of the producing stuff. He does some of the filmmaking. One of his main things is he takes a lot of the photos that are on our Facebook page are ones that he took as production photos.
Yeah. Is there anything else?
I just want to say that Google desperately wants me to be searching for Academy Awards instead of El Academy Awards.
I encountered the same problem. Just
and
now
I don't think we named it.
It's El Academy because it's Elk River. Elk River, yeah. And then we're the Elks. Elk River.
That makes sense.
Quite genius.
Yeah.
Supposedly there were Elks in Elk River.
I've never seen one. The site is currently not up if it's elkacademyawards.com. That was Paul's domain, wasn't it?
Yes.
I am looking at a page on the Elk River High School thing, a media team page and Elk Academy. There's nothing there, but
whatever. Interesting.
The content at one point.
Well, the important thing is we provided opportunity for the students when we were there, and it went on for a few years after.
It was really fun, a lot of stress for me at least.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like the director of the show.
It's the struggle that makes things worth
it. Yeah, no, definitely. All right. Well, I guess we can talk about some exciting things that we've been working on recently and also the past summer, too. Have you, Wade?
Yeah, so one of the main projects that we work on is we're making a Halo fan film called Dawn Under Heaven, which you can find more information about at dawnunderheaven.com. And this last spring, we shot our one of our teaser trailers. It's more of a kind of intro to the film, getting an idea of what the feel is going to be like, and we're pretty much almost done with it. We're getting the 3D animation figured out, but it'll be out shortly. And
yeah, we had lots of fun with it. Got to test out our first trooper suit, which is kind of one of the main purposes of it. And we had our friend Trav who's on the project as well.
Yep,
one of the writers.
If you're a fan of Halo Reach, the suit that we built is actually pretty much an exact replica of the suit that the troopers wear in that game. And so we did a lot of work on making it look really good and professional, and can't wait to show everyone that. And then the film is going to be shot later on this year.
Yeah. And I also have to say, if anyone listening has watched the Halo web series Dawn Under Heaven, our armor looks almost just as good as the armor that they have.
In that what?
What did I say?
You said Dawn Under Heaven. Not the first time someone's made that mistake.
Well, For Unto Dawn, the armor, like
also a ship name.
Yes.
Yep.
Too many dawns. Where's the sunset?
Too many dawns.
The Dawn Under Heaven, though, that title was picked out before For Unto Dawn.
It was. Yeah, we made our title back in 2010, back when Bungie still had all the say on Halo, and then 343 came along and came up with that name. So anyway, that's basically what we got going on right now. We're still in the recruiting phase to find talented people to help us out and make it look amazing, which, you know, I'm sure will happen very soon. So yep.
And we're also working on, I am working on a project with the other fan films. We're kind of trying to collaborate a little bit and making a website.
Which we should say.
HaloFilmSource.com. It's not quite finished right now, but it's kind of a place that we want people to come together and check out all the films that are going on in the community, get resources, and just kind of talk to each other and about making, expanding the universe.
Exactly.
Outside of 343.
Yep, there are a lot of great indie fan films being made, especially out in California. There's Halo the Fallen, Helljumper, which I think they
should be coming out soon.
Yeah, their third episode. And we're working with them, and there are a lot of great talented people heavily on the YouTube community. So. Mm-hmm.
I guess one thing that I am working on at the moment with Austin is writing a web series for Intersection that I've been kind of in the process of doing for the past couple of months, but now I'm able to devote a little bit more time to it. So I don't really have too much to say about it yet because it's still in development, but I am very excited about it. I think it'll be quite awesome. And yeah. I'll probably share more about that next podcast.
Cool. And I think we wanted to share some information about some cool projects that we were indirectly involved with, not intersection-wise, mm-hmm. but individually. And I think Wade, was it in the summer?
Yeah, this last summer. The film community here in the Twin Cities is relatively small compared to Chicago or either of the coasts, but it is growing, and it's full of ambitious people. You have to be when you're shooting with 6 months of winter. The film that I interned on is called Eden, directed by Todd Cobbery, And there's not an official website for it, but if you go to toddcobery.com, T-O-D-D-C-O-B-E-R-Y.com, there's more information about it. It's kind of a post-apocalyptic film where I think it's the U.S. is divided into several city-states, one of them called Eden, and most underground because of this... the air became contaminated with like a virus, something.
Pathogen.
Yeah, with a pathogen. Thank you. And one of them is called Eden, and it's full of a bunch of corrupted officials, and people are suffering, and it's kind of a horror movie, but it has incredible visuals, and I would encourage everyone to check it out if they're interested in that sort of thing. So
is there a trailer or teaser up for right now?
You know, I don't believe there is, but I'll get back to you if I find one.
Do you think anybody would watch a movie where everything's just okay and awesome? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's always corrupt. It's always the end of an era of, explosion, actually, nuclear war.
There is one movie that I can think of offhand that fits that criteria called The Invention of Lying. And it's set in this happy world, this sort of alternate reality where lying doesn't exist. People, you don't lie. So if I were to, like, one of the things that you make fun of in the trailer is, like, the guy walked up to someone and says, "I'm an Eskimo." "Oh, really? How long have you been an Eskimo?" Like, everything's taken there. And so the main character...
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I've seen it.
Oh, is it good?
No, it's good. It is a comedy. It's the guy from the original Office. I forgot his name. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Ricky Gervais?
Yes. He's the main character. Yep. And he kind of... invents lying in the movie and uses it to
interesting
get fame and stuff.
Another
and
example I would say is probably Sense and Sensibility or Pride and Prejudice. Any movie like that is where nothing happens. And
I mean, like,
I guess the people are struggling.
Oh, don't even go Downton Abbey. A lot of stuff happens in Downton Abbey.
I mean, maybe no, nothing really. I mean, there's some that happens, but mostly everybody's just talking in British accents. And
you haven't
cool
even though. Seen the show.
Are you kidding me? I've seen both. Like,
I was just wondering from just something that I've thought about before is are people only interested in seeing something bad happening?
I think people like seeing triumph.
I guess.
And you can't have a triumph without a loss.
Tends to be a recurring motif in film. There was a quote by Hugh Grant upon seeing Cloud Atlas that I found, and he said, because he's in Cloud Atlas, he's a tribal chief, a cannibal, which he pulls off brilliantly. I didn't know it was him until I, you know, found out in the end. And he said something along the lines of, "There wasn't nearly enough throat slitting in Sense and Sensibility. I always felt there should have been more." So that was Eden. And then David, you had another opportunity here.
Yes, I did. I'm not going to talk too much about it because this video is forthcoming. It should be out probably between January 21st and the end of the month. And I got the opportunity to go out and work with Corridor Digital on a shoot. And
who are they?
Just for our listeners, know that they are probably one of the top YouTube channels right alongside Freddie W.
Yeah, they work with him a lot.
Yeah.
They're in the same office.
They got to be in the... YouTube Remix 2012.
Yep, which was awesome.
Anybody saw that?
Yeah, so, yeah, they make a lot of great content. A lot of it, more so than Freddie W., is a lot of CG
very
elements.
Visual effects.
Yeah. So they do a week or 2 weeks between videos because they often have a lot of CG content.
They are trying to go longer, though. I know, you know, obviously Freddie W., they got the high school, what is it?
Video game high school.
Mm-hmm. For a series wise, and then Corridor Digital, I know that they have had some in the past, but I think they've kind of been working towards longer content, not just a couple minute video.
I think that they're down to a video a month, I believe, is what I saw the last comment on one of their videos. But I mean, they've had a couple of web series that they've done. I think one was Sync, which was actually pretty good, and then there was another one before I came. Exactly.
With Tether, but I only saw the first episode of that.
With Tether, that was a sort of a test bed
video,
because that video, I think that one's about 15 minutes long or so.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's one before it, and then there's another Tether video that kind of teases the idea again.
Yeah, because I think that the teasing video cost them like $3,000 to $4,000 to make. Mm-hmm. So like they did it as a test bed to see if people would be interested in it, and then if they are going to do something with that, then following that up with a, like a Kickstarter fundraiser.
Yeah, and kind of the reason we or David got to work with them is they are originally from Minnesota.
Yep,
still
and
are.
They are in California right now. They pretty much live. Don't they live like next to Freddie W in that group? Pretty much.
I'm sure there's some.
Yeah.
But
they work in the same space, and yeah, they like their family is still here in Minnesota. Yeah. So like during the holiday season when they make their
because that's how they did Tether
right.
too.
Yep,
it was
well,
when they were back for the holidays.
Well, then also, or one of the like an older video, I believe it was Frozen Crossing. It was a Call of Duty kind of fan film kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they did that, or at least the first episode they did here.
And they also did their pretty popular Assassin's Creed. Video in Stillwater
did.
At the same place that you
yep.
were,
actually,
David.
That one, that location is right across the street.
Yeah.
Where I was, one area we went to was the large field in Tether, where you're looking out across the field and then you see the Tether come down.
That, and I would just like field. To say that, yeah, they have over 1 million subscribers on YouTube and 880,000 likes on Facebook, and they basically just made a post saying, hey, if you're around St. Paul, email us back and you can possibly be in our movie. And there were countless people saying, oh, I wish I was in the area. And we were lucky enough to be like, yeah.
Yeah, boop. I almost went.
It didn't work out for me. Yeah.
I was just getting my car fixed.
Yeah, so
stuff.
It was really awesome that I got the opportunity. I got to PA for them to do some to do some stuff. And then also I got to be an actor, an extra in it. Right. And I don't want to talk too much about it until it's out. Because I don't want to spoil any things, but I look forward to talking more about that and
sure,
that experience
sure.
as soon as that video has been released.
And and what we would like to see as a company and as a group of you know independent filmmakers especially is to provide an environment here in the Twin Cities that can help people not want to move out west like they had to do, right? That people who can stay here and do what they love here.
Fosters the opportunities for people to make films here.
And they also the reason they're doing what they're doing too is they didn't like the idea of Hollywood and that because they were doing, I know at least Freddie W was doing like visual effects and stuff with some more popular movies, and they just did not like the atmosphere. Yeah.
And he made several good points, you know, where you're on set and things take hours and people are frustrated and you're sitting there with all this equipment not doing much, waiting for someone, and it seemed to suck a lot of the fun out of it for him and other people around him too. But yeah, so that's going on with David.
I think we're looking pretty good on time. I think we're gonna move into kind of more of a our personal opinions about some worldwide movies, games, whatever
big picture,
is going
no
on.
Intended.
I think we're gonna kind of reflect back on the holidays because obviously a lot of movies come out. And the three that we're gonna focus on was obviously The Hobbit. Huge and Django and Les Mis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what do we want to talk about The Hobbit first, probably.
I think so
we've all seen The Hobbit. That's one that we've all seen.
We all saw it opening night, high frame rate in 3D.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, because I think that is an important film.
Do we want to talk about that first? The high frame rate.
I think so because like that's. I think that it has the opportunity to become a game changer.
What do you?
I think.
Just quick personal opinions go around the table.
Well, first, do we want to explain what high frame rate is
sure.
if people don't know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, as a standard of filmmaking for decades, films are shot in 24 frames per second. So, if you know how videos work, it is the illusion of motion, not actual motion. So, it's 24 pictures taken every second. And that's what film has been like, and that's what digital cameras, to replicate the film look, they try to do. So what Peter Jackson decided that he wanted to do in The Hobbit was to shoot in 48 frames per second. So you're getting twice as many pictures every second.
Twice the movie.
Yeah, and the reason we can do that now is because we're all digital. Mm-hmm. And he shot on all red cameras
Red
for
optics.
That.
Right.
Yeah, and
because before a film, the cost of film strips was ridiculous.
Yeah,
and
obscene.
No, they still are.
They have to try to limit, and 24 was the least they could go without ruining syncing.
Yeah. Some kind of audio
and,
word.
Yeah, and for a visual, if you look back at old Charlie Chaplin films and like that kind of sort of choppy
right,
motion.
Right, 16 frames a second.
Exactly, yep, that was at a lower frame rate.
And so I understand the widespread criticism. I've heard a lot of things about like Todd or other filmmakers I'm friends with on Facebook who didn't like it. It creates the illusion that things are sped up because you have to slow, you have to like shoot at 40 frames a second and then slow, or how do they do it? They slow it down or speed it up. No, they speed it up, right? Because otherwise if they played back at 24, it would look half as fast. So they shot at 48 and then sped it up so it would be played back at 24, which creates the illusion that things are sped up when you're watching it.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that in some scenes. The scenes that to me were most noticeable was the, especially in the beginning where the dragon was attacking, and it was like they would do like the shaky, you know, just, oh, there's destruction, there's things falling on people, and I noticed that I could see things a lot better, actually, like motion wise.
Right.
Like it wasn't as blurry. And so then it looked less fake because they can usually cover up with the motion blur of what actually is going on.
Right.
Instead of somebody faking like they're falling down.
They speed it up because projectors couldn't project at 48 frames per second.
Yeah. It's only like when we saw it in Roseville, if anyone's in Minnesota listening, they had to get a special projector just to show this film. You can't show this
film. I could
be
wrong. That's
yeah,
just a hunch.
Yeah, like,
because otherwise it would defeat the purpose if they had to.
Yeah, so like they had to get a special projector just to do 48, and there was a big marketing campaign on Peter Jackson's part before this movie came out, trying to push movie theaters to buy the new projectors for it. But I like that you bring up that the opening scene with the smog raining destruction, because over break I also got to see it a second time in 24 frames per second, non-3D. And I noticed a huge difference in like scenes like that when people do a real fast pan and it all gets smeared and blurry. And it's...
Yeah, because that's kind of the point. Happening. Like even like movies like Born Identity or somewhere, there's a lot of close combat. You know, they're shaking the camera. They're not, you know, physically hitting each other. So they can kind of... You kind of don't notice some...
Right.
You know, if they're not really good acting, it can kind of... I think it's just a new... They have to learn how to film with it.
It is. And it's a new experience for the audience, too. You're not you're seeing something you really haven't seen before. A lot of people said it looked like a soap opera, kind of video-like, which I understand. We have a high refresh rate on our TV, and so it looks like that a little bit. In fact, Lee, at your old place, the TV, it had a high refresh rate.
It was 240 hertz.
And the first time I saw like a movie on that, I didn't like. I was like, "What's happening? Am I having a brain aneurysm?" Yeah. Like, it looks like
it
a
looks
video.
Really weird. It's awesome with sports.
Yeah, and so you have to get used to it. And Peter Jackson responded to the criticism by saying that it's literally a new experience. You know, your brain doesn't know what to make of it, right? Because you're being fed information that's way more than you're used to.
They kind of used the first story of the 3D with the train. Where it was or no, that was the first motion picture.
Yeah, where
or
people
one of the
thought
first...
a train was coming at them.
Yeah. And then everybody jumped out of the way. It was just
right
on screen.
I understand the criticism, but I embrace change. I liked it and I can't wait to see more of it.
Yeah.
Some of the other shots were just beautiful. Like
I could
the
see
quality.
This being a big, really widely used among action films. In the future, with you know, a way like as you were talking with Bourne Identity and all these really fast shots of just you see a fist and then it cuts somewhere else to see the hit or whatever, and it just helps smooth all that out. I wouldn't be surprised if like dramas they still sort of stick to 24 because there's sort of that like you need to want to step out of it, like you're looking into this world, whereas in action films like you know because it's a lot about spectacle and the wanting to sort of really embrace that.
Yeah, and another reason for it was the new age of 3D. It's supposed to help out with a lot of eye strain in, I forgot the technical reason for it, but it's just supposed to help you see the 3D in a much more pleasant way.
Without the red and blue glasses of the
Just, I think it's related to motion blur. I don't know. I forgot what it was.
I didn't like it. You didn't like it. Let's hear an opposing opinion.
Yeah. And then we'll gang up on you and beat you up.
That's fine. Okay. So I like how movies aren't real. And I like how when you watch an older movie, like let's compare this to Lord of the Rings. Excuse me. If you watch it in a DVD format, there's a lot of special effects that you don't really realize are special effects. I talk specifically to some of the fighting, some of the large scale battles are going on where the camera pans back or it shows the whole landscape. And I think David was talking about, there's a program that they used that randomizes the combat between the figures and stuff like that.
It was called Epic.
Massive.
Yeah.
It might be made by Epic because I know like it's a bigger company that makes a bajillion bits of software.
But that was on the special features.
Yeah, it's a really cool problem. It's very expensive too.
But, my point is that like I didn't realize at all that that was special effects. And there are a lot of other special effects. It just didn't really. This seemed more a part of the film because the quality was not as good. Like, you couldn't tell that, like, this color is a little bit more vibrant. So, it must be.
I don't. Just to rebuttal, if that's the correct word. But I don't think that's an excuse, though, is to say, like, why can't we just make the special effects better then once we have the film that's better? Like, isn't that a reason to...
And I'm sorry, when you said that, I flashed back to the HD versus SD debate.
Mm.
Yeah.
I guess for me...
Because that's the thing, like, people have to look better now and better makeup.
Oh, yeah, they have. When newscasters, introduced to HD. Oh, now I can see all their wrinkles.
Oh, no, it's more real.
Bigs. Yeah.
I guess when I can tell that there's special effects or when I can see that special effects, it takes me out of the feeling of being in that movie.
Yeah.
It's a level of, for me, that is... heavily involved with special effects on my own and just reading up on it. And when I watch movies, I notice it a lot more than regular people. Mm. So I think it might be a level of awareness on an individual part.
Yeah. And one,
just cause I pay attention to that stuff more.
I enjoyed like overall the visual effects didn't bother me except in one scene where it bothered me immensely. And that's in the dinner party scene. Mm-hmm. When Gandalf is there with the dwarves, because they shot this in 3D, if people have seen the special features on the first Lord of the Rings, you know, they did a lot of camera tricks about perspective because of the different heights and sizes of people. You can't do that in The Hobbit because it's 3D, and so the audience
specifically that it's filmed in 3D.
Yeah.
Because there are plenty of movies that are
3D. Yes, that it's filmed in 3D, that you can't do those tricks because the audience will be able to see the depth.
Mm-hmm.
With those scenes, they had two sets. They had one set that was the full made like bag end set for the hobbits and the dwarves, and then Gandalf was like literally right next to them on a green screen set that was just nothing green screen, and they had two computer controlled cameras that were doing the same thing. And in those scenes, it popped out to me so badly that Gandalf wasn't really there.
That's weird because I thought they did a much better job than the original, they were able to do more because really they didn't have a lot of interactions they had to use the little people a lot, just showing it from the back.
You mean between Bilbo and Gandalf in Lord of the Rings, the first one?
Just the first, Frodo and stuff. Like, they couldn't have a lot of interactions, right. And if you look closely, you could obviously tell their eye contact was not with each other. I thought they got to do more of it in this and more people
together.
Like
the whole rest of the movie, it didn't bother me, and I think they did a great job in the whole entire rest of the movie, except in that one scene. Yep. It stand out, and I felt like I got slapped in the face with
it. Okay.
For me, it was the char. There, the little, it was from that scene in Hobbiton where it goes to a chimney, and you see like some little flicks of
embers.
Popping out, and those look obviously CG'd in there.
I remember that shot specifically. Yeah, I know what you mean. It did look a little fake.
So, I think we probably wrap up the Hobbit.
Okay, well, what did we
go like?
What
should
we
do like
movie?
A star? Like, should we just say yes, no?
We
liked
can't
it.
Do thumbs
didn't
up
like it.
No, because Disney will get angry at us.
Well, I don't know. Just general opinion, I guess. Yeah.
I thought it was good. I enjoyed it immensely. I loved going to it. I loved a lot of the nostalgia moments. Because I love Lord of the Rings. I am not at all surprised that it was not up for Best Picture for the Oscars. I expected it not to be, because I don't think it was as good as The Fellowship or any of the other Lord of the Rings movies.
Well, also the same exact thing happened for the other Lord of the Rings, but that also goes into the trilogy
mindset. They were up, though, weren't they? Weren't they up for Best Picture?
I know they
we'll
might
look into
have
it.
Been, but I'm not surprised
and just,
they didn't
win. And it just for the type of movie it is, it still has a problem getting a nomination.
Yeah, it's a fantasy. Yep. Dramas tend to be be a little bit more geared towards Best Picture. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. I'd give it a 3 out of 4.
3 out of 4?
3 out of 4?
Four out of five.
I liked it a lot, possibly more so than any of the Lord of the Rings movies, mainly because the protagonist is much more interesting to me than Frodo. Mm-hmm. Frodo seemed pretty helpless in his roles.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me, though.
Yeah. They cast brilliantly. Yeah. I thought.
Someone talked about that, which I thought was a really good point. I liked it, though. I thought it was a great adventure. That's what I kind of took it as, just this amazing journey through Middle Earth. And I loved that we got to go back and dive a little bit more into the lore. And I read The Hobbit, so it was cool to see some of the more things come out, where Lord of the Rings, I thought, was just more of a skim of a journey across this
right.
land that they didn't really get to talk about it
right.
too
it
much.
It makes me want Peter Jackson to make 3 movies for each book.
Yeah. but with
nine
that,
movies
with
for
that,
Lord of the Rings.
Though, for the protagonist, they had a good point where, because they had to split it up in 3 movies,
mm-hmm.
the book... Bilbo doesn't become a hero until the end of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And
now he has more of an arc.
Now he's already a hero
yeah.
in the eyes of
yeah.
the dwarves. And
I'm sure this will be a record-breaking special edition release of this movie, because it will be the first ever director's cut where the director's cut is shorter than the theatrical release.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
All right. What's one? Do we want to say Django? Who
yeah.
saw that, actually?
Ben
is that only
that.
Ben?
Yeah, I saw Django.
Oh, you saw
oh,
it too?
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It was incredible.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And I really like Inglourious Basterds. This was probably better than Inglourious Basterds,
yeah.
in my opinion. You two haven't seen it?
No.
Yeah, can I ask and also one quick question that I think can help segue you into your discussion about it? Because I noticed before the movie came out, Spike Lee came out and said that it was an insult to his heritage.
So you know it's good.
And
Spike Lee didn't like it.
And
who is Spike Lee?
He's a
very famous director.
Yeah, and he has a lot. He tackles a lot of racial issues. Mm. He's African American.
Okay,
and
I can
so
understand why now.
Yeah,
but well, the thing is, like he said, like he did, it's an insult to his heritage, and it's when racist or I don't know if he said racist in so many words, but. He hadn't seen the film.
Mm-hmm.
He only saw the trailer.
Yeah.
So then going into what you guys are going to talk about.
Ben, maybe you can Google Spike Lee reaction to Django and see. Just read a couple of results.
Oh, here. I'll find that if you guys just want to talk about
it. Yeah. Well, what did you think, Ben? What did you think?
So I haven't really seen too many Tarantino films. I think the only one that I can really think of right now is Inglourious Basterds. I think I might have seen part of Kill Bill and
mm-hmm.
Some of the other ones, but I haven't seen Pulp Fiction, which I know is like a sin in the film world. I don't know. I still have to see that. Anyway, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very kind of fun sense about it.
Yeah.
And, I like how Tarantino loves like kind of old like westerns. He loves films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that really kind of came out. I'm trying to think of the actor who played the doctor in
Christopher Waltz.
Christopher Waltz.
Yeah.
I absolutely love him.
He's great. And he is up for an Oscar this year.
Mm-hmm.
Best Supporting.
Well, he was up last Oscars, or the Oscars that the Inglourious Basterds were on.
Mm-hmm.
I think he won.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was nice to see him. He was like the
He
villain.
Was the good guy.
Well, yeah, he was the
time.
Good guy
yeah.
this time.
And it was great to... I thought... Tarantino films are typically pretty violent.
And this one
but,
was.
Well, it is very violent, probably one of his most violent, but the way he does it is just so much fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was a quote, I think, by Penn Jillette. When you have people putting on a show in a play or in theater or a movie and there's violence, but at the end of the play, they get up and take a bow and you see that they're still, okay, it's a celebration of life. That violence is a celebration of life. And so I don't think I've heard a lot of criticisms from people saying his films are really violent and a bad influence on people. But I don't see that necessarily with the way he does it.
No, it's a fun violence.
Yeah.
It's more like almost kind of like slapstick. If you the next level of what slapstick would be,
mm-hmm.
In my opinion. So like it's versus a drama where there is like really like loud and intense music that heightens the situation where there's lots of fighting and everything, like
yeah.
an action movie. That the violence in there feels more just feels more bad, but
it does.
This is just it was more just kind of fun. Yeah, I don't know.
There are moments of violence which are a little bit more graphic and horrifying to watch, mm-hmm. which I think, I mean, it lends the sense of brutality to the antagonist, Leonardo DiCaprio. He's a brutal character in this movie, and mm-hmm. fun to watch the battle of wits between him and Christopher Waltz's character.
Did you notice the scene where he broke the...
Yeah, where he was method acting, right? Mm-hmm. So this is what happened. They're at the dinner table talking, and in this scene, Christopher Waltz's character and Django, they're trying to outwit Leo's character into selling him a slave without giving too many details. Mm-hmm. And he gets so riled up in this scene that he slams his fist down on the table and his hand starts bleeding profusely, which, in watching the movie, it didn't really make much sense. Why? I mean, it showed him as a crazy person, I guess. I found out that
he broke glass.
Yeah, he was so into the scene and in his method acting that he just broke it, and he's in the scene continuing the dialogue while he's wrapping his hand.
A very bleeding immensely hand. Yeah. And like I loved how he was pulling out glass pieces.
Yeah.
And then he wipes his bloody hand all over the actress.
Right, and it lended a lot of grit to the scene that I liked.
And I have the tweet here that Spike Lee sent out. It was, "American slavery is not a Sergio Leone spaghetti western. It was a Holocaust. My ancestors were our slaves stolen from Africa. I will honor them."
And did he say anything different after he watched it?
I don't think he has watched it.
Anyway, I would highly recommend it. Of the three films we're discussing today, it's highest rated on RottenTomatoes.com at 88%. So I would highly recommend it.
And it's up for an Academy Award.
It is. A couple, maybe.
It just for best picture. Or at least, no.
And best supporting actor.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it'll win, but yeah.
All right. Last movie, which I saw. Who else saw?
Which one is it?
Sorry. Don't raise your hand. We're on an audio podcast.
I saw it. David saw it. We all saw it.
Okay. I'll start off with that I liked it.
Wait, what movie are we talking about?
Les Mis.
Les Mis. Just Les so Mis everyone's aware.
Les Mis.
I love musicals. I did have quite a few problems with it though, because they did do it differently than any other film musical, where the audio seemed to be the audio from them actually acting and singing rather than in a studio, and then they voiced Dub over it. Yeah, mm-hmm. their song. So
you had a problem with that?
Most of the time it did lend a couple scenes, especially
I Dreamed a Dream.
Yes, that mm-hmm. scene where you could inner voice the sadness really was a part of her singing. But a lot of times when you're walking around or doing activities, it's kind of hard to sing
mm-hmm.
well mm-hmm. with breathing, because you're, especially if you're trying to pick up something or doing something where you got to take a more right. breath, it's harder to get your vocals. I don't know
okay.
how to describe it. So
you would have liked it to hear it a little more neat and clean.
A little bit.
Like a stage performance.
A little bit.
Well, I think what they did was more like a stage performance.
Yes. Which what they did, it seemed like it was a play and then mm-hmm. they just filmed it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I would say to that then is that, a lot of, like in the stage performance, the stage performances of those songs I've gone back and watched, there you don't see that emotion come through the way that they sing. There's not necessarily like the voice cracking or like the, not like not that it really was, but like you don't really get a sense of that disparity in the songs, in stage versus
in some song. Stage
some yes
because like, this.
Depends on the depends on the direction, I suppose.
Yeah, and like this has been going on for like 35 or 40 years or something.
Because I think some of those, probably the two older women actors, I forgot their names.
Which characters?
The mom that dies.
Oh, Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway, and then the older child version.
Amanda Seyfried.
She was in Mamma
Mia. Amanda
yeah.
Seyfried.
Mm-hmm. I think their quality of singing were probably the best at that type of singing.
No, Amanda has like a bravado that just keeps going.
A really fast vibrato.
I thought Hugh Jackman probably struggled the most.
really?
I don't know. I just couldn't understand him a lot.
Oh, I thought that... why am I blanking on his name right now? The police officer.
Oh,
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe. Crow. God, I hate myself.
Well, he's clearly not a trained singer. No, you can tell.
I liked him.
He definitely comes, yeah. comes
well,
out.
he does have his own band, though.
Well, he's not an operetta singer, we'll say that.
Yeah, but I thought Hugh Jackman did great, and yeah, his background is all musical theater. But, he hosted the Oscars...
3 times.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a couple... It was
2 or 3 times.
I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but I know what you're saying, David, and he had, like, a musical number.
He had, like, two musical numbers in the Oscars. I enjoyed it immensely.
I thought was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to disagree with you, Lee. I thought the live singing was great and a great change of pace. One of my favorite musicals is Phantom of the Opera, and the 2004 film, they did all studio recordings, really highly produced, and then they dubbed over them, and they did a terrible job. The lips weren't synced up half the time, and a lot of times you could tell that they were trying to convey an emotion on screen, but the problem was what they were lip syncing to, the singing, was just, they were just trying to sing as good as they could, and there was no, like, there's no sync between their emotion on their face and what they were lip syncing to. So I really liked that they did it different this way.
How about the other one I had was the talking singing. I did not like that.
The what?
Where?
It's an operetta.
Oh yeah.
I know.
That's just the subject material.
For me, like, I don't know. Like, I just wanted them to talk between songs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you'll have musicals that do that instead, but musicals like Pirates of Penzance and largely The Phantom, I don't think there's too many lines that are spoken except in the movie.
Just because it, like, I just noticed the theater, like, you have to, when the singing doesn't stop, everybody gets kept in this heightened state of attention, and there's no, like, relaxation. Yeah. And that's what I think the talking brings is...
It was a tiring film.
Yeah, okay, the singing's done for a little bit. All right, relax. Let's listen to some dialogue. Okay, then go back into song where everybody was just, like, really quiet through the whole movie, you know, just like... Okay, I gotta really pay attention to hear what they're singing about, because it's hard to hear words when you're singing, because it's not normal talking.
Did you know that the actress who I forget the character's name, who's the woman that is infatuated with the boy, but the boy doesn't like her back?
Fatine.
Yeah,
I want to say. I think is her character. No. Fantine is Anne Hathaway's character. My mistake. Let's see here.
Do you recall?
I'm sorry.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, how do you say it? It's Eponine?
Eponine. Yeah. It sounds kind of like Ebony. But Eponine. Anyway, the actress who played her,
Samantha Barks.
Yeah. Is also, also did that same role in the stage performance of Les Mis.
Yeah. She did it on Broadway, which was a great song, On My Own.
Mm-hmm. And listen to the different songs. Like, she sings them differently. And I think it goes back to your comment that it's all about directing. But the songs, how she portrays them, how she sings them, and how she shows her character's emotion to them are differently.
And one more, I need to jump down your throat for a moment, Ben, because I know you made an error here, and I was totally right. Hugh Jackman has only hosted the Oscars once.
What?
He has hosted the Tonys like five
times.
That's
what I meant. Sorry. I meant the Tonys.
You're a moron.
Big difference.
Oh, my God.
What do you guys think of Sacha Baron Cohen's...
I have never been disappointed by his performance in a musical. And this would only be the second musical I've seen him in. The first one was Sweeney Todd, which I enjoyed. And
he was great
in this one.
I liked it because he was the only character, him and
HBC.
Helena Carter, that brought a little relaxation to the movie. And like I was saying, where there's singing the whole time where everybody's like heightened. Like, that was like their first scene was like, oh, that's funny. Okay, it's not sad. Yeah.
And I thought that whole song about them, how they cheat their customers, was also really well choreographed. How they showed all the elements
in
there
and
whatnot.
Yeah, I agree.
I hope Hugh Jackman wins Best Actor. I certainly hope.
Has he won?
Is he up?
Yes, he is.
He is, okay.
Yeah.
And has he won?
I don't know. Four? I was surprised that Leonardo DiCaprio wasn't up, actually. And has he won an Academy Award?
No, he hasn't. For some reason, there's some background into that I've heard that.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
There's like two types of like actor. Like, if you're not in this special group, and you're not accepted by them, then you have a much harder time.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for them to win Oscars, but I don't think it necessarily, you know, separates people in different categories of like, oh, these are the Oscar winners, these are the non, these are better, these are worse. You know what I mean? It's a little more nuanced than that, I think.
Yeah, they do use it for marketing though.
They do. Oh, they do. It's a huge.
They even use the nominations like.
Yeah, and like, as I mentioned earlier, like usually as soon as a film gets, if they get almost any Oscar nomination, any of the big ones, I should say, like the actor ones, best director or best picture, that usually extends their theater run by several weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As soon as they get that.
All right, well, go around, thumbs up, thumbs down.
I'd give it a thumbs up, again, they can't thumbs see up. That.
Yeah, I would love to see it again. If not... If for nothing else, just to see Anne Hathaway's number again, the
I dreamed a dream.
Which by the way, it's one close up the entire song on her face.
Yes.
You can't look away. You're there with her pain and
the tear comes at the right moment.
The tear comes at the exact right moment, which we were watching an interview with her and John Stewart today, and I guess that was take four, but she went on, she wanted to keep going for another 8 hours or so.
I did love that scene. Loved how it was filmed, but I thought overall the movie they did too much of the close up, face shot during songs.
Yeah, I did notice that a lot of the cinematography was handheld and close up.
Yeah,
like sometimes shaky.
Yeah, I don't know. I just like I said, it just kept me in this heightened state of like in their face singing. Like I was just like, that's too much to take in.
Yeah, and the trouble with that is, you know, with a musical, when you're watching on a stage, you have so much control over what you're seeing and how much of a close up you give one person, and then on the screen, obviously, you're forced to see it in a certain way.
Yeah, for that part, I think it worked very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that song was perfect for it.
Yeah.
All right, so everybody liked that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think in the future, we're gonna try the same format. What like. Inner circle, middle circle, outer circle with like our approach to what we're talking about. Yeah.
So I hope everybody enjoyed it. I think we're gonna try to do monthly first, so our next podcast would be in February.
Yep, beginning about the second week of February.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
See you guys soon.
Yeah, thanks
for listening, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.